Stupid thing.
I'm just having fun.
Seeing ghosts.
The Forgotten Camp.
We're on to Cincinnati. It's nothing about the past, nothing about the future. It's right now we're preparing for Cincinnati.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast. My name is Eric Jensen and I'm joined today by two old friends. One, Brendan Natter, all AZ on sports, I think, right? All AZ baby.
It's at All AZ Baby, but I go by All Arizona Sports, either or at work.
On Twitter, a great, great guy with coverage of some Arizona sports teams. And, of course, old friend, Yusei Koshal, one of, honestly, the oldest guests of this podcast. What's up, Yusei? How's things going? You're at fan-sided again. Your great work with Bear Reports always really well done, and thank you for taking a time out of your busy schedule posting passive-aggressive things on Snapchat to join us on the podcast.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'm doing well, dude. It's interesting because the last time that you and I were on the pod together, we got into like a 35-minute arc because this was an hour-long episode, and I remember that me and you got into like a 35-minute argument, I want to say, about
Nick Foles, I think.
Yeah, Nick Foles. It was and just to let you know what I said, you know, I said Trubisky was gonna start and that Pace was gonna force his hand. And that's exactly what happened. Yeah, it is what it is, dude. But excited to be back on here. I know, kind of being at home and doing the whole school thing, it just seems like I have way too much time on my hands now. Cause it's like, okay, great, get out of one, you know, get out of class. And then it's like 2 hours later, got to jump on the End Zone pod with Eric, talk football. But what am I supposed to do in the 2 hours? Record another podcast, which is what I did. So yeah.
Nice. Where can people find that? What do you guys talk about?
So yeah, we just got done recording Picks for Pace on Bear Report, guys. That's a weekly NFL draft, college football, Chicago Bears podcast that I'm going to do. So we're going to be looking at the Bears through the angle of the NFL draft and college football, specifically focusing on a Chicago Bears angle. You can follow that on Twitter at Picks for Pace, and it's brought to you by Bear Report.
Nice. All right. Well, gentlemen, let's get right into it. So we're in week 7. Oh, by the way, I should throw this out. Trey Watkins, our fantastic co-host on Fridays. What a great job by him. I had some school stuff and some work stuff I had to attend to last week. I couldn't do the preview show, but, I mean, he did a great job. Was wonderful. We'll sing his praises more when he gets back on Friday, Big Show Friday. We have two other guests that are going to join us, so check that out then too. But shout out to Trey, did a great job this week. All right, week 7 in the books. Here we are. Trades are starting to happen. We're almost halfway through the NFL season. Week 7, week 8, those are good times to get kind of barometers on how the league's going. And I figured we'd stick kind of on the NFC side this week with our two guests and talk a little bit about the NFC North and the NFC West. But I wanted to start with the North and specifically the Bears, the team you say covers so diligently. The Bears, they are a team that is now 5-2, lost, I believe, 24-10 on Monday Night Football. I may have that score entirely wrong, but I think that's the right score, right? You say
it? Sorry. 24-10.
That is the correct score, Eric. That's why, yeah.
That's why they pay me the big bucks. but 5-2 now, a pretty good looking defense. Some questions with the offense, but I wanted to start with Brandon. So, Brandon, the Chicago Bears, right? They are a team that is 5-2 right now, sitting in, like, I believe, in one of the wild card spots in the NFC. Like, what do you think the ceiling is for the Bears right now?
So they're playing good football right now. Their defense is showing up when they need to. This team is mostly carried by their defense. I'm not going to take away from what they have on their offense, but they're proof that having a good defense can win you football games, and the record shows that. Do the Bears seem like a 5-2 team on paper looking at their offense? Probably not, but they're winning football games, and so I honestly think they could have a 10-win season.
Yeah, I don't think that's out of the question much at all. I just believe the Bears to be a team that will beat up on bad teams and struggle a bit against good teams, though. I mean, they played the Buccaneers incredibly tight, but even then their offense was not great. Nick Foles seems to not really be the answer at quarterback, but he'll give you what you expect from Nick Foles, which is 4 to 7 great performances a year. And with that, defense, I think you're right. I think they are probably a 10-6 type team, but makes it to the playoffs and, you know, unfortunately gets waxed in the first round by a far superior opponent. But I want to move to USAID now. I want to talk about the defense because you say this team reminds me so much of the first Broncos team I covered when I started doing this podcast. I don't know if you remember the 2017 Broncos led by Trevor Siemian, but this is sort of that team, like a year or two removed from having one of the best defenses in the league. A lot of the pieces are still there. The defense is still really, really good, but the offense just really struggles moving the ball, and they're not bad enough to be in the position to draft a highly ranked quarterback. They're kind of stuck in the middle. They are in team purgatory. Would you sort of agree with that assessment?
I can totally agree with what you're saying. I do feel like if they were to draft a quarterback, maybe mid-round, it may be a decent idea, but who knows what's going to happen with that QB situation after this season. But yes, I feel like what they're missing is if they had a franchise quarterback, they could be borderline unstoppable.
What do you think, you said?
Yeah, so what Brandon's saying there is true. If the Bears did have I think that just applies to like all teams, right? That if you did have a franchise quarterback, you are going to be unstoppable, especially when you have a elite defense that showed up time and time again last night. Now, you know, to your point, listen, the Bears are somewhat in quarterback purgatory, or team purgatory, as you like to say, or as you mentioned, Eric, because the reality of the situation is, listen, you have a defense that's only going to allow 19, 20, 21 points a game, but then you have an offense that can't compensate for it. And that's not a winning formula in this league. We're 3 years into that. And I like Matt Nagy, by the way, as a guy that can manage a team. I'm not sold 100% on Nagy as like a play caller. That stuff showed up again last night as to why I have my little beef with him. But the reality of the situation is that it's like you brought Nagy in here 3 years ago to revitalize the offensive side of the ball, right? For the last 3 years, it's been basically one of the worst offenses in the league. 2018 was his best year. And even that was because it was an elite defense setting up an offense, the offense was short field position. So Nagy, you go, you make the switch to Foles, you go to your backup plan, and now 4 games in, you're still preaching the same mantra that you were preaching after the Week 2 win against the Giants, which was, hey, we left a lot out on the field. We still need to get better. We still need to get better. I get quotes from the Bears organization from the press conferences. Nagy said the same thing the last couple weeks now. And so you have to ask, is Nagy failing with, like, what's the real issue here? People want to say the offensive line, but ultimately at the end of the day in this league, coaches, good and bad coaching makes and breaks teams, all right? And the best teams in this league, they are coached well, and then they execute well, and they execute consistently. So consistency, coaching, execution, those are the three things. The Bears have not done that well on the offensive side of the ball in 2020 so far. Nick Foles has not done it well. And, you know, Adam Hogue and Adam Johns, they're two of the biggest Chicago beat writers in the area. I listen to their podcast, and they're raised a fair question. They're like, hey, should you go back to Trubisky if the offense is just going to play like how it was? And I'm like, you know what? There is a serious case to be made because, to be honest, Foles has not looked any better in my eyes, even though a lot of Bears fans were selling him as this Super Bowl 52 MVP and a guy that, you know, Magic Nick was going to somehow find his way here in Chicago. But ultimately, it's like, let's just say the Bears do go back to Trubisky. That's a terrible look because then you are admitting at that point that you failed with Nagy, you failed with Trubisky, is what you admitted by benching Trubisky. And then you went ahead and, you know, now you're failing with Foles and things aren't working out. So you're basically admitting that your backup plans also fail too. So that's just, you know, the Bears offense this year, it's a reflection of like Nagy's inability to kind of get out of his own way.
Right. I would also argue Ryan Pace, who hasn't really helped that organization much draft-wise. I mean, he pulled off a nice Khalil Mack trade, but and they draft well defensively, but he, much like my general manager, John Elway, has failed to find a quarterback. And I think at some point you have to be held responsible for that. But do you think they're going to be – do you think the ownership in Chicago will look at a team that goes 10-6, which I think is likely, and goes to the playoffs? And do you think they will say, like past years with teams like the Titans who have made the playoffs with who was the guy before Vrabel?
Malarkey, I believe it was.
With Malarkey. And they get rid of him despite making the playoffs. Do you think Bears ownership will do that, or do you think they'll say, hey, maybe we give this like one more shot? And do you think they say, well, maybe it's time to fire the GM and do it with a different GM? And do you think I just think if you fire the GM, you're going to fire the coach too, because I don't think you can have two different guys. That is just shown to work so poorly in the NFL when you have guys that are hired years apart and are not from the same regime. So I just wonder what you thought about that. Like, do you think that the Bears will be that ownership group will be bold enough to really make a move and fire a coach even if they make the playoffs?
No, and here's why. Look, for the McCaskey family, the Bears ownership, right? The mantra this year essentially was get to the playoffs, and then the ESPN report came out, I think it was last week or the week before that, saying that Jeremy Fowler reported that he spoke to people saying that Pace and Nagy are going to get at least one more chance, which would be 2021 in that context. And then, like, I've also heard certain things from people saying that, yeah, Matt Nagy's going to get his pick of the next quarterback. Now, that there is an intriguing statement to me and one that holds a lot of weight, because was his pick of the next quarterback, was it Nick Foles? And I was told this last year, right? So last year in October, so it's been a full year. The reason that statement still holds weight is because it was the next pick of the quarterback, Nick Foles, who, by the way, Matt Nagy handpicked after working with, or after consulting John DeFilippo and Bill Lazor, both of whom worked with Foles in the past as well. Or is the next quarterback going to be a guy like a Trey Lance or Justin Fields or BYU's own Zach Wilson or Alabama's Mac Jones, whatever the case may be? But the point is that if the Bears make the playoffs, right, and I want to say they get to the wild card and then they advance past the wild card, right, because now I don't think they're going to have a kicker that's going to cost them games because Cairo Santos has looked good. I do think that Pace and Nagy are going to be back for one final ride, especially when I look at a lot of the talent that is coming back next year. It's all Pace and Nagy acquisitions, right? Looking at 2022, ahead to the 2022 offseason, though, there's going to lose a significant amount of talent. And I think that if Pace and Nagy fail in 2021, then you're definitely going to have to blow things up, because the next GM is and head coach, they're not going to want to walk into like this roster, especially with the state of things and the lack of draft capital and the limited resources that they have financially.
I'll be interested to see how that kind of plays out. I wanted to ask you some specifics on the defense, specifically Akeem Hicks, who I have not watched a ton of Bears games, admittedly. I have always been a Akeem Hicks fan. I've watched him in the past a lot. I have not really seen him this year, but he seems like he's gotten a little bit of heat within kind of the Bears community over the past few weeks. How would you grade him right now? Is he playing well?
Yeah, he's playing at a high level. And, you know, one of my big fears going into the 2020 season was that Akeem Hicks had a dislocated elbow and he was getting up there in age because he is in his early 30s now. And we see a lot of times in this league when guys get to that 30, you know, when they hit that 30-year-old mark, it's kind of like they begin to slow down significantly, like Danny Trevathan this year, who, you know, again, is slowed down because he had a dislocated elbow too. But the point is that when Hicks dislocated his elbow, my fear was, is he going to lose a step? He hasn't lost a step. He's actually looked much better. He's actually the glue. Listen, all the attention on the defense goes to guys like Kyle Fuller, Eddie Jackson, Khalil Mack, obviously Robert Quinn too, but Akeem Hicks is the glue that makes this defense click because he's the one that is eating up a lot of the double teams up front, right? He's the one going up against the offensive linemen, taking on those double teams. All of a sudden, what's happening? Now you're freeing up Roquan Smith. Now you're freeing up Khalil Mack, asking him to get after the quarterback. And when you line up Hicks and Khalil Mack on the same side, what tends to happen? Offenses, they can't focus on both. They can only focus on one or the other because the third guy on your side that's coming after you is Robert Quinn. So Hicks is the guy that does not get the most attention, but really, like, he's the reason this defense is as good as it is, even with Eddie Goldman missing.
Right. The secondary, as you can see him in my full Utah garb tonight, Jalen Johnson, worth the hype?
Yeah, he is worth the hype, right? Because I think last night on Monday Night Football, yeah, they showed the statistic. He's got like 9 pass breakups, which is second in the NFL. So Johnson's definitely a guy that I think that he would have been a first-round pick in the 2020 draft. He would have been one of the first corners selected. You could say potentially after C.J. Henderson or Jeff Okuda. But why did he slip? He slipped because of his shoulder injury, right? And I think to begin the year, he was playing with a harness. I am not sure if the harness is fully off yet, but the shoulder injuries, you know, were a reason that he slipped. But yeah, he's just a really physical corner, gets after guys in man coverage, just sticks on them. So this is someone that I look at. And then the biggest thing of all about him is he is really willing to learn from guys like Kyle Fuller and Buster Screen. So Johnson's someone that I look at and I'm like, yeah, he definitely has a future in this league. He is worth the hype. Is he going to get the hype that a guy like Chase Young is? No. But every single year, there's just that one rookie that seems to fly under the radar. And I think that this year, Jalen Johnson's the guy.
Right. Eddie Jackson, one of my favorite safeties in the league, not looked upon highly by those of PFF right now. He's graded as a D, I believe. What would you kind of – would you agree with that prognostication?
No. And you know, it's – 50% of me is like, okay, I absolutely hate PFF. But then, you know, because I don't believe in their grading system and whatnot. But the other half of me is like, okay, you paid this guy to be one of the highest paid safeties in the game. So he should be showing up every game. Now, I do think that he shows up every game. I think that part of the reason that PFF is grading Eddie Jackson so harshly, and this is why I disagree with the grade that they're giving him, is because there have been times where it's like, he gets called for pass interference, right? Defensive pass interference on a play that should be a pick. So when you have that going on, and it happened, you know, in the Rams game last night, it happened in the Panthers game the week before, robbed them of a touchdown, happened week 2 at home against the Giants. When you have calls like that, it's really hard to sit there, and then PFF's grading them against Jackson. It's kind of hard to sit there and be like, all right, well, I don't think Eddie Jackson's the solution here, because I think over the last couple of years, the NFL across the board just really has an issue with the refs. And I'm not saying this because I'm a Bears fan. It seems to happen on my team every week, but it just seems like the refs are making these bogus calls where it's like you look at one play and you're like, all right, that was not an OPI or DPI, or that was not roughing the passer. And then there's some that you look at and then they do call flags and you're like, yeah, that one was questionable. And then there's some that are like, all right, that's just the bad call straight up.
Hmm. All right, let's talk about Brandon's team here, the Cardinals. I want to start with you, though. You say they are right now a team battling with Seattle Seahawks, win behind them basically, but a tiebreaker in hand. Kyler Murray is, I would say, up and down, but has looked very good the past few weeks. What do you think about this Cardinals team right now?
So, okay, I followed the Cardinals all throughout 2019, and I was really impressed with what Cliff Kingsbury did in year one, especially considering there were certain criticisms of Kyler Murray in the sense that, yeah, he's too short to play and whatnot. They did good in year one, right? This offseason, though, the biggest move that they made was getting DeAndre Hopkins for the robbery that they did. And it was a big move because you gave, no disrespect to Larry Fitzgerald, but you gave your young quarterback a major, major weapon in the offense, right? You look at Kenny and Drake, and you look at Chase, I believe it's Edmonds, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chase Edmonds, right? That's a great 1-2 punch right there. Andy Isabella's, I liked him coming out of the draft a couple of years ago. Love Christian Kirk, too. He's a prototypical slot receiver. And then the Cardinals have some nice pieces on the defensive side of the ball from the front seven all the way to the secondary. The point is that this Cardinals team's exceeded expectations, and they're going to be one of the more fun teams to watch down the stretch here, because after that Sunday night game, I do believe that this is a team that could compete for the NFC West Championship. I also said this going into the offseason, or I want to say like June, July, August. I was like, hey, if there's going to be a team that goes from worst to first this year, it's going to be the Arizona Cardinals. Because, yeah, they trade for Hopkins, but they also had a really nice offseason. I know they brought in, I think it's a Devondre Campbell, kind of shore up the middle of the defense. So they have a lot of really nice pieces there. You know, Cliff Kingsbury is one of the best young offensive minds in this game. And there's no doubt in my mind that they're going to continue to get better down the stretch.
Right. Brandon, now to you. I want to start with the defense.
Okay.
Break it down for me. Like, they're ranked very highly in terms of DVOA. Despite not having Chandler Jones, they played really, really well on Sunday night. And despite playing not really playing Isaiah Simmons, they're playing really well. And despite having Vance Joseph as their coordinator, they are playing really well. What do you think about the defense? Can you kind of break it down for us? Like, why is this unit having success?
Okay, so first I can start off by saying that the Cardinals defense has faced guys like Matt Stafford, Teddy Bridgewater, Joe Flacco so far, those types of guys. Jimmy G, for example, like they are a highly ranked defense at the moment, and I think maybe it's a little too in that Sunday night game, like you said, we do have Vance Joseph. At the beginning of the game, you saw he had soft zone four-man rush, and Russell was just picking our defense apart. And you saw in the fourth quarter and overtime, he started dialing it up, getting more creative. If you look back at the film behind that Isaiah Simmons interception, he sent seven people two plays in a row, and then on that third play, he dropped back four guys, and they got that interception. That's the type of stuff I want to see from a defensive coordinator, instead of the same vanilla stuff that they show all the time, and they just get picked apart. But also going after what you said, losing Chandler Jones is always really is huge, but he wasn't as productive at the beginning of our season like as he was last season. So I don't know if that's been a lingering injury, but the only way that they can make up for that is if they do make a move trade-wise for maybe another D lineman. They just got Marcus Golden from the Giants, which is a nice little homecoming for him. He can add to the pass rush. But yeah, so, and same with Isaiah Simmons. Like, Isaiah Simmons isn't getting many snaps, and Vance Joseph probably feels that he's a rookie. He should take it. We should take our time with him. But I honestly don't think that's the best route to go with somebody like that. I think he should be out there getting snaps.
Right. Let's talk about the offense now. My question for you is kind of who's the three, because obviously Hopkins has kind of carried the load and Christian Kirk provides a nice deep threat, but like, who is the three right now? Because I don't think it's Larry Fitzgerald anymore. Is it Andy Isabella? Is that kind of the third target that they're going to right now? And do you think that third slot type receiver has been effective enough this year?
So I don't know what Cliff Kingsbury is doing in Arizona, because some one week it'll be Andy Isabella getting a bunch of snaps, and then in that Dallas game, he missed both of those deep balls. Like he ran the wrong route apparently for both of them. That's what was told in the press conference after. But yeah, so I think that they kind of go hand in hand, because in that Sunday night game, you saw that Larry Fitz was being used a little bit more. He's kind of being used as like a tight end this season, and they also have guys like Chase Edmonds out of the backfield that they go to. So I really don't think they have a defined three. I think they're going to have to work on it in the future, because Fitzgerald, who knows if he'll stay for another year or if they're going to hold on to Isabella, because it's very disappointing to see other guys like Metcalf and McLaurin and AJ Brown, all these dudes that were taken after Andy Isabella, perform far better than Andy Isabella.
At running back, the Cardinals are pretty uniquely situated as well, Brandon, because Kenyon Drake, aside from one or two big performances, has not really performed this year at the rate he did last year. Now he's out for a few weeks. Is he going to hit IR?
I don't think he will hit IR. Don't at me on that. I think they said that it would just be a couple of weeks. If you were to go out for the whole year, I do see them trying to make a move for a running back instead of
what? Why don't they use Chase Edmonds though? Because he's so talented.
Yes, and Cliff Kingsbury in the press conference will say, "Oh, Chase Edmonds is an every down type of back," which I completely agree with them wholeheartedly. There, I think they kind of are stuck with Kenyon Drake right now because they got him on that franchise tag, and he came off of a phenomenal finish last season. So I think it ultimately just will come down to how he finishes. But I hope they let Kenyon Drake walk. It'd be nice if they could have traded him, but I think with this injury, he'll probably finish the season as a Cardinal and then probably enter free agency. Those are just my predictions, but I am not too worried. Hopefully Chase Edmonds can handle most of the touches. And then you also got that Eno Benjamin from ASU that can finally get some looks, hopefully, or DJ Foster. It just depends.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just think they should go to Edmonds. He's just, I think, far superior back. He's really good at what he does, and I hope they move to him going forward. Finally here, can't leave this team without talking about the quarterback. Your overall thoughts on kind of Kyler this year. Can I give you mine first really quick?
Yes, I'd love to hear it.
So I think he's been fine. But like he was such a second half passer last year. I wonder if that's kind of going to be the same way this year, because honestly, outside of that Seattle game, I've watched basically every Kyler Murray start because he fascinates me as a player. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that Seattle game was by far his best game, but he has had some problems this year. Like, he still has incredible talent, makes some great throws, but he's missed some throws a little bit. His decision-making, especially in that Lions game, was just totally off, in my opinion. And he's, I think, at times been hurt by terrible play calling. I have a really hard time kind of evaluating him right now, because I think he's probably a borderline top 10 quarterback, and I'd have no problem if somebody put him in the top 10, but I just don't view him as that right now. I view him still very much as kind of a extended rookie almost, who's still very much kind of learning on the job. I don't feel like he's taken that second year leap that we see quarterbacks make sometimes. I know the media wants to say that, but I think they're just saying that because people are just watching him a lot more now. Like I don't see that much of a difference from this year, from last year, to this year, to be quite frank with you.
I completely can see that. Coming off last year, I know every team didn't have a preseason. I think there could have been some jitters in the first 4 weeks with maybe some miscommunication. Also, I haven't been an 100% fan of Cliff Kingsbury's play calling, from screens to to runs up the gut. Like sometimes we shoot ourselves in the foot. I honestly still think Kyler and Cliff are still working things out. I wholeheartedly believe Kyler Murray is a generational talent at quarterback. I think that regardless of, I feel like he can perform, just he's just going to need the right play calling. He needs to be utilized correctly. And sometimes when we play like very conservative with one of the biggest threats out of the backfield as a quarterback, like I just feel like Kingsbury and Kyler are working harder to get on the same page. And I think that this Seattle game was a huge step in the right direction.
Yeah. I would totally agree. I think this was by far the best performance of the year for obvious reasons. They beat an incredibly good Russell Wilson, which I think that moves us to the rest of the division. And I wanted to start with you, Sade. Right now, even after the Cardinals have beaten the Seahawks, do you still view the Seahawks, you said, as the front runner in this division?
Yeah, and I know I'm higher on the Cardinal than I guess a lot of other non-Cardinals fans would be, but here's the difference. The Seahawks have Russell Wilson. The Cards do not. Now, this isn't to say that I'm diminishing or, you know, I'm not saying Kyler Murray can't lead this team to a division championship, but we've seen Russ time in and time out do things that nobody in this league has accomplished. In this league, that position is what it comes down to, is, and it's what separates the good teams from the great teams. Now, the Seahawks, yeah, they have their own flaws and whatnot, like not having a pass rusher or not having a consistent enough pass rush, whatever you want to call it. But at the end of the day, like Russell Wilson, right, he is a guy that, you know, he is the biggest difference maker on the field when he's playing, and it's noticeable. And so the question is going to be, if this division comes down to the Seahawks and Cardinals, can Kyler outduel Russ to lead the Cards to the NFC West Championship is what it will be.
All right. Yeah, I would sort of agree. I really like the Seahawks. I know that the defense has major issues, but I mean, they have two top 10 wide receivers and a quarterback that is playing at an all-time level right now. And I don't know. I'm really excited. This is has been one of my favorite rivalries for a long time, really since Carson Palmer. The Cardinals and the Seahawks, I think is the best rivalry within that division. And I'll be super interested to see when they play each other again, week 12, right, Brendan?
Yes, they play the Seahawks, before they play the Rams their first time. So
okay,
they play them the 19th of November. I think that would be.
I can't. It's okay. But yeah, I think that's they're an interesting team. The Rams are pretty fascinating to me because I'm not certain I entirely believe in the offense, but the defense is just incredibly good. Despite having some injuries last night to Terrell Burgess, who played really, really well the first part of the season here. I mean, Jalen Ramsey's at the height of his powers. Taylor Rapp is fantastic at the safety position, and they've got Aaron Donald up front. What do you kind of see the ceiling as for the Rams, Brandon?
So for the Rams, I completely see them continuing their success right now. What they've been doing, they haven't been scoring the most points, but they have been, their defense has been keeping them in games. They've only given up 124 points, and that's the least amount of points given up in the NFC West and second is the Niners. So yeah, the Rams have a defense that probably outmatches the Cardinals, but it's going to be very close because you also have the 49ers that could easily turn around and compete in this division as well. So we'll see. But yeah, hey, you remember when I called that out about the Niners, the Cardinals overtaking the Niners in the division? Sorry, that's a little bit of a callback.
Yeah, Honestly, I'd still they're really close. I mean, I don't know if you saw what they did this week, but they are just a well-coached team, I think. And despite the injuries, they are a threat to drop 30 a week no matter what. And the secondary is a huge problem right now. But, I mean, they took care of business this week. And this division is just so incredibly tough. I think that the nobody here finishes with a losing record, I don't think.
I completely agree with you.
But just 9-7 is not going to get you to the playoffs in the stacked NFC. It just won't. So I think that the Niners are kind of the odd team out in that division right now. You said I want to talk about the NFC North. I would say the entire division outside of the Packers is rebuilding. Would you agree with that?
Yes and no. So, you know, like, okay, Detroit and Minnesota, obviously, like, they're rebuilding. With Chicago, I mean, they still have a chance to be in the playoffs. So I'm not sure I would classify a rebuilding team as – or a team that's in the playoffs as rebuilding necessarily. But, like, you look at it, right? The Vikings have only won – like, the Lions are sitting here at 3-3 after a slow start out of the gate. The Vikings have been the team that's in the division. The Vikings have been the team that has regressed the most this year. So very clear to me is that this division's coming down to, once again, the Bears and Packers. And the thing with, you know, when the Bears play the Packers, I think it's week 12 and week 17. What's going to happen is this: the Packers are not going to hang up 30 points because they're going to be going up against a good defense. But then it's going to be on the Bears to kind of execute and be back in the game. So right now, like, I would give the edge to Green Bay, but I still think the Bears have a chance to win this division. Because, like I said, with the way that Minnesota and Detroit have been playing, there's no way that they're going to make up the ground and all of a sudden, like, storm back and then, you know, overtake Chicago or Green Bay, for a matter of fact, to win the North.
Interesting. Yeah, I just don't see Chicago winning enough games to keep up with Green Bay's win total, though I could definitely see them splitting the division series. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility, or wouldn't be even shocked if the Bears won both. But I just think in the end, the Packers outside of the division are going to have way more wins than the Bears do down the stretch. I just think that the Packers are going to be a 13-win team again. I'm just sort of convinced by that. Their schedule's really soft, and their defense started to sort of figure it out against a bad Texans team who have been playing better on offense recently last week. And if they can get three punts a game, they can in like the first half, which is what they did against the Texans, they're going to win every game because the offense is just going to score. And I mean, what they did against the Texans, they did without Aaron Jones. And I get the Texans aren't a perfect defense, and I get that we need to see it happen against a great defense because Tampa Bay kind of shut them down, but I just trust Aaron Rodgers implicitly at this point. The Lions, I don't buy. I just don't buy them. I don't know. Brandon, what do you think about the Lions? I just see them as a team that, I mean, they trade for Everson Griffin today. They're a team that mistakes themselves as some sort of playoff contender, and they just aren't. I mean, the defense is still bad. I mean, you took care of a bad Falcons team. Like, they have not beaten a good team this year. And I don't buy the Lions in the slightest. I know Matthew Stafford's great. I know he's a great quarterback. I don't think he's playing at the height of his powers right now. I don't currently think he's a top 10 quarterback. I can't, I love the Lions, but I just can't believe in them right now.
Yeah, I think the Lions are just the true definition of mediocre currently. They have some pieces to work with. I am a huge fan of Golladay. I think DeAndre Swift is going to be great for years to come, hopefully. I think they have some all right pieces on the defense, but they're honestly, like, they have some work to do. And I mean, I'm pretty shocked that they're 3-3. I honestly think they could be 4-2 because of the Bears game. You know exactly what I'm talking about, but But yeah, so I don't know. I feel like the NFC North is an interesting division. It depends if Aaron Rodgers can keep up his success. He got shell shocked in that Tampa Bay game, but Todd Bowles is a phenomenal defensive coordinator, so I can assume that he did his homework with Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur's offense. But yeah, as Stephen A would say, Aaron Rodgers is the bad man, and this is a angry Aaron Rodgers because the Packers drafted a quarterback that could potentially replace him. So like you said, a 12-win season is probably what you'll see out of the Packers. The Bears can definitely make the playoffs, and we'll probably get a better idea of what step the Bears should take next. Should they take a step back or should they take a step forward?
Yeah. The Vikings are kind of endlessly interesting to me. They traded away Yannick Ngakoue after trading for him to the Ravens. And that shows me that Mike Zimmer and their GM are safe. They're going to commit to a rebuild, and that kind of starts this year. And they are a really kind of interesting team to me because I know that their record is not great right now, but Kirk Cousins is just not nearly bad enough to have you in a position to draft another quarterback. I see them as a 6-ish win team, maybe less, probably 5. I think that they are going to surprise some teams down the stretch. I think Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen are an excellent offensive pairing, and unless they ship Thielen out of town at the trade deadline, which, I mean, isn't against the realm of possibility, I just think that they are far too good to be a team that ends up in kind of the tank for Trevor, fail for Fields sort of sweepstakes at the end of the year, despite the fact that they are one of many one-win teams right now. I just think they're much better than that, and I'll be interested to see how that plays out. Let's talk about one non-NFC West and one non-NFC North team really quick, and then maybe throw out a trade candidate or two that we want to talk about, and head out of here and get to bed. This will go up, you'll be listening to this Wednesday, so this will go up on Wednesday. So you said, why don't you give us a team to talk about here really quick?
So, yeah, the team that I'm going to go ahead and pick is the Buffalo Bills. And when I look at them right now, okay, so, yeah, you've had a couple tough losses. One was to the Chiefs, who, again, are going to be the kings of the AFC. Another one's to the Titans, who, by the way, right, they were also in the AFC Championship game a year ago. Looking at the Bills, though. So, yeah, you're 5-2. Your 3 of your wins have come against teams within your division, right? So being 3-0 against the AFC East really helps. When I kind of look at things down the stretch, okay, so you're playing the Patriots this Sunday, November 1st. You got Seattle and Arizona after that. Then you're playing the Chargers, the 49ers, the Steelers, the Broncos, Pats again, and then Miami to wrap the season up. Now that's a tough stretch right there. And I think the question for me is this is why I bring the Bills up, because I truly believe that if they can get 5 or 6 wins here, like just 5 or 6 straight wins, then you have to put them in contention or in the conversation for a potential Super Bowl champion. Josh Allen has, you know, taken the third year leap that a lot of people thought that he was not going to take. A lot of people thought that last year, this was just an offense that was carried a lot by a really good defense. I would say that this year is much more 50-50. The offense and defense carry each other. So the Bills are going to be the most interesting team to watch as we get into October and November here.
Yeah, I just sort of disagree. Over the past few, I'm a big Josh Allen fan. I think anyone who follows me on Twitter knows I'm a big Josh Allen fan. But like he's regressed over the past 3 weeks. Like, I'm not sure exactly what it is. He's just not what he was to start the year. And, I mean, this is a team that kicked field goals against the Jets. I just the defense figured it out, but it's the Jets. I mean, I really worry about the Buffalo Bills right now. I think they got kind of exposed here the last few weeks as a team that may not be exactly what we thought they were. I mean, I think they're a playoff team. I think that division is overall pretty bad. I think the Patriots are a team that might miss the playoffs, as crazy as that is to say. But I don't buy the Bills as some sort of contender. Unless Josh Allen gets hot again, which, I mean, I guess he could. It's only been like a 3-week down stretch, but he has looked down the past 3 weeks or so. And man, I don't know. What do you think about them, Brendan? I just don't buy what they're doing right now up there.
See, the Bills, I feel like they have their ticket to a division. Like a division title, they're going to win the AFC East. The Dolphins, Patriots, and Jets probably won't touch them. So they honestly have that easy path to a division win. But I honestly am not entirely sold on Josh Allen. Like you said, he has regressed the past couple of weeks. I know you're high on Josh Allen. And I remember last time I was on here, I think I said I wasn't too high on Josh Allen. The thing is, like, it goes for, like, these quarterbacks, like, overthrows, these misses, like those can't happen in important games like that. And I see it all the time from Josh Allen. I see it from Kyler Murray. I see underthrows from Baker Mayfield and all that stuff. And it's just like these quarterbacks need to avoid that to stand above the elites, the veterans.
Yeah, they also have a really weird running back situation, and the fact that Devin Singletary has kind of disappeared the last few weeks, and Zach Moss just isn't good enough to really carry the offense. I don't know. And I mean, the teams they scored against were incredibly bad defenses. So I wonder if it's a product of, you know, playing weaker opponents. I don't know. What do you think you said about our counter arguments here?
I think they're definitely legitimate arguments, because when you look at some of the teams that the Bills have played the first couple of weeks, so like, okay, so they have 5 wins right now and 2 losses. So 2 of your wins were against the Jets. You beat Miami in there too. So essentially 3 of your wins came against your divisional opponents. And then when you really had those 2 prove it games, which was against Tennessee and Kansas City, you failed to show up in those, not to mention in Tennessee. I mean, I can't forget to mention that against Tennessee, you got blown out 42-16. So the reality with the Bills is, yeah, they're still a team that has a lot. You guys are kind of right here. They have a lot to prove. But at the same time, I wouldn't necessarily be like, all right, the only thing that they did was kick field goals against the Jets. So, you know, they haven't, that doesn't mean that they've totally fallen off. That's why I picked them as my team, because I do believe that if they get hot down the stretch, then they are kind of that third or fourth team from the AFC that you can talk about as Super Bowl contender.
I would like to throw it now to Brendan. Who do you want to talk about here?
So I know this is probably one of the more interesting teams, especially with where the NFL is headed. The Tennessee Titans, I think they're one of the most interesting teams, just how they operate. It's kind of that old school run down their throats. And then while Ryan Tannehill can be sneaky and hit guys like A.J. Brown and Adam Humphries, like, and Jonnu Smith, and then just that defense with a bunch of big names, I just feel like the Titans are – can we consider the Titans to be, like, elite? What do you guys think about that?
Titans defense has names, but is sneaky bad.
Yeah.
Jadeveon Clowney just has not gotten pressure this year. Like, he never gets sacks, but he hasn't even gotten pressures this year. Jeffrey Simmons has by far been their best pass rusher. Outside of Malcolm Butler, the secondary is bad. Like, every week teams pass on them. And I mean, you saw it last year when Malcolm Butler was hurt, that was an issue. And you see it again this year. I mean, their secondary is just not good. Like, Christian Fuller, their rookie, he's not very good. I mean, I love guys like Kenny Vaccaro, but he has just not played well this year. I really don't like the Titans secondary. I think that there it's a major flaw. And I like them a ton. They stayed in the mix against the Steelers, and I think they're part of the elite family of the AFC, which I think the AFC is ruled by three teams right now, and it's the Chiefs, the Steelers, and the Titans. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they weren't able to beat the Steelers, and the fact that they lost because their kicker missed a game-winning kick, and they are a team that plays these incredibly close games. They have not blown out anyone except for the Bills. And you continue to stick with Steven Gostkowski, despite him being terrible from outside, like the 30-yard line. Like, they've got to move on from him because they are a field goal win team. Like, they need that. And if he would have hit that game winner, like, if they get it first in overtime, it's over because they're running with Derrick Henry and scoring. But they need a better kicker. And they'll be fine, but I just worry against they're not quite up there with the Chiefs and Steelers. They're not complete. They're a really great offense with a defense that struggles and a kicker that can't hit kicks.
Yeah, that's their weapon of choice 100%. And I feel like that's why they're so interesting to me, is because this is a team that's not like it. They're the imposter among all the AFC powerhouses, like the Ravens, Steelers, and Chiefs, like you said. Like,
I think they're better than the Ravens. I just don't buy the Ravens on any level. I don't know. They have taken a major step back. Repeating last year was always going to be tough. But, I mean, they're not a game-changing offense, really. And Lamar Jackson looks bad throwing the ball again for some reason. He looked like he'd really improved at the beginning of the year, but I think he's regressed in the last few weeks. I don't like what the Ravens are right now.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I've honestly, if you compare Kyler Murray's numbers to Lamar's numbers last year, like Kyler's numbers this year to Lamar's last year, Kyler's numbers are a little bit higher. So I also am here to put in my vote for Kyler Murray as MVP. I know you guys may disagree. Yikes. But it's down the second half of the season. I could totally see it happening.
Why? How? Unless he keeps up with Russell Wilson's touchdown numbers, it's just not gonna
happen. Absolutely. I the only acceptable person that I see winning MVP other than Kyler, I know I sound like a biased Cardinals fan, but it's definitely gotta be Russ. I completely wholeheartedly think,
I mean, he's gonna break Peyton. I've said this for weeks now, like since week two, he's gonna break Peyton Manning's record.
Yeah.
Like, he's throwing more than 55 touchdowns this year. This is going to be the greatest offense the NFL has ever seen by the end of the year.
Yeah, well, losing Chris
statistically
Carson, losing Chris Carson is huge. That was depends on how
Carlos Hyde jumped in and dominated. Yeah, that's fair. So I'm not too worried. I trust the Seahawks more than I trust any team in the NFL right now. You say, what do you think about the Titans?
Okay, so here's my opinion on them, right? They're an offense that scores points in bunches. Okay, it's not exactly like, okay, they're essentially a big play offense that's run through Derrick Henry. And I think that Steelers Titans game was that Steelers Titans game was on in my area this past weekend, and it was honestly like the Steelers showed, because they jumped out to, I think it was like a 24-7 lead at one point, or 24-10 at one point. The Steelers showed that if you're going to slow this Titans team down, it starts with stopping Derrick Henry first and foremost, because all of a sudden you're taking away the main thing that makes their offense such a well-oiled machine. And I think that, you know, for the Titans, that's something key to keep in mind here, because like, they are set to play a couple teams in the second half of the season that do have some pretty good defenses, right? And that's going to be key here. So the Steelers provided the entire league with a game plan of, hey, you may not absolutely stomp on the Titans and take them completely out of the game, but there are things you can do to slow down that running game. So, but with that said, I think that it's like any other team at this time of year, right? Like the Titans, if they get a couple things figured out, like their issues on defense and Clowney starts getting pressure, all of a sudden you're in a situation where maybe they are a, you know, a couple like, you know, maybe they are a team that can represent the AFC in the Super Bowl, but they're certainly not on the level of like Kansas City, for example, or some of the other AFC powerhouses.
Absolutely. All right, let's do lightning round here. Trade deadline's coming up. All the reports from Adam Schefter and Ian Rappaport are saying, though, that these things are going to happen within the next 2 days, basically. Friday's show is going to be uber long because we're going to have two guests and probably do trade deadline stuff. But just quickly from each of you, one trade candidate that you think is intriguing. We'll start with you, Brandon.
I think I'm just going to go with the obvious one because it was in the news today. The Stephon Gilmore being up on the market. I know that nothing has been really talked about too much with that, but just it's very interesting how they're going to go with the – they're going to put the defensive player of the year, the AFC defensive player of the year on the trade market. It just goes to show you, like, where New England sees themselves. They don't see themselves as a contender this year. And they're planning to rebuild, and whoever that's behind or what's at stake for New England is interesting. But I could see them get two great picks for Stephon Gilmore, maybe a player.
Mm-hmm. You say.
All right, so I'll stick in the AFC East, and I'm going to go with the Jets. I think the reports that have come out about Quinn and Williams are that, yeah, Jets defensive tackle, by the way, are that, yeah, you're shopping him. Then it's like, no, you're not shopping him. But then it's, well, the general manager, Joe Douglas, is trying to clean up this mess and get rid of all the pieces from the previous regime. He's listening to offers. I think that if Quinnen Williams is wholeheartedly on the move, because again, this is a guy that coming out of Alabama during the 2019 NFL draft, I had compared to Aaron Donald Light. That was my comparison for him. I think that if Quinnen Williams does get moved, it's going to be a team that believes that, okay, we are just a defensive tackle away from, and a good defensive tackle away like Williams, from potentially turning our season around or taking that next step. And then kind of getting into the contender / pretender category. So that's why for me, Quinnen Williams is without a doubt one of the more intriguing names, because whoever trades for him, what you're getting is this, right? Is you're getting a guy that's basically halfway through the second year of his contract and he's still on his rookie deal, which means that you would basically control him for the next 2 to 3 seasons and you would have, you know, a say on his fifth year option and whatnot. So with that comes the potential to have a long-term building block, and you could get him for like a second round pick as well, honestly, which is a cheap price to pay for a guy of his talent.
I'll go offense. Quarterback trades are fun. It depends on how Tua plays this week, but I think if Tua plays well, there is like a real chance that early next week, Ryan Fitzpatrick gets moved. I just wholeheartedly believe that. I think that he doesn't really want to sit and be a backup. And if they are like, even if Tua struggles, they're not going to go back to Ryan Fitzpatrick. So I just think that he might be on the move. The other guy that I'm really interested in is to see what the Jets do with Darnold, because if they truly believe that he's not the guy, and they have reason to believe that, it's been 30-plus games. Like, he's right now, his value is higher than it's going to be this offseason. This offseason, you're probably going to get like a third for him. Right now, you could probably get a second for Sam Darnold. And who knows, maybe a team like the Patriots, like I doubt that they'd ever trade within division, but maybe a team with the Patriots calls up and says, hey, we'll take on Sam so we can let Cam walk after next year and roll with Darnold as the Pats quarterback. Perhaps a team like the Denver Broncos with a guy like John Elway, who really likes a prototypical passer like Sam Darnold, and maybe maybe he wants to say, hey, the Drew Lock experiment is not really working. Let's bring in Sam Darnold as potentially a backup to play. I kind of doubt that because the Broncos have just not done that this year. They've always stuck by Lock, which I think is a mistake. I've said that too many times at this point. But yeah, I think that those guys are really interesting to watch. Well, thank you both so much for joining me. It's been a ton of fun. We'll start with Brendan. Where can people find some of your stuff? Why don't you plug whatever you're working on right now? And then Usaid, why don't you follow him up and we can get out of here?
Yeah, so guys, you can find me on Twitter at AllAZBaby. My title name is All Arizona Sports. I cover all Arizona sports. It's just me. That's basically all I'm promoting here. Usaid, what do you got to say?
So, yeah, guys, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Usaid Koshul. That's USAYDKOSHUL. I write for Fanside. It's the Windy City, covering the Bears there. I write for 247 and CBSI Sports Bear Report as well. That's on Twitter at the Windy City FS and at Bear Report. And that's about all I have to promote. Thanks for having me on the show again, Eric.
Yeah, thank you, Eric. No worries, guys. Follow us on Twitter at EndZonePod. We'll be back Friday with a preview show. Thank you all for listening very much. We will see you next time. Peace out. Follow us on Twitter at EndZonePod. If you have any suggestions, questions, or you just want a shout out on the pod, send an email to endzonepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.